Rumination, 3CR's Rooming House and Homeless Persons Issues program, featuring information on health and housing services, as well as live local guests, artists and performers from our unsung community. Join us at 12 p.m. on Thursday on 3CR 855 AM.
Some things you laugh about, they really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and kiss. When you chewing on last gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. That's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's a thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sins, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow. So always look on the bright side of death. Yeah, death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh, death's a joke, it's true. You see, it's all just a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Life. Life.
Well, that was pretty cool, Tone.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be back, people. I've had my house molested, if I can say it that way, where someone decided just to take to it. And, I'm back now with new guitar, possibly within a week, and just happy to be here.
Yeah.
Good on your time.
Amongst it's friends.
Glad to have you back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, no, well, that's it. No, they didn't take one hat, so you can look at that as the bright side of life. I've still got all my hats.
You got a deadly collection of hats.
Yes, yeah, so I've just been collecting them over the years. Maybe a bit vain, but it helps spend it in a better way than I had been.
And you're obviously listening to Tony Creedon, and we're on the Mighty Ruminations for this very special International Day of People with a Disability for 2015. And joining me in the studio, Kelly, is Spike, Daz, and of course Tony. Hey, everyone.
Hey, how you going?
Yes, and since it is Disability Week, I'd like to do a little shout out to our disabled friends, namely Mr. James Little, who's suffering from throat cancer. I hope you're listening, Jim, and if you are, well, our wishes are with you.
We'll see you on the 24th.
Well, that's probably all we can say. And, of course, Setta, who's also been having a few health issues, is also not with us. If you're listening, Setta, we're thinking about you too. Good on you, mate.
Good on you, Daz.
Yeah.
I hope you're feeling well, guys.
Yeah, the place is not the same without you blokes around. You're part of the Ruminations team, so...
And you have been for years, Jimmy, so we're thinking of you, mate.
Yeah, we certainly are.
Oh, and I ran into Mr. Dream Rainbow yesterday, he's out of hospital and feeling a bit better, and hopefully he'll be coming in to join us in future weeks.
He wasn't a prisoner jumped through hoops, was he?
Yes.
Prisoner jumped through hoops.
Okay, I hope he's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we've got a pretty bumper show lined up for you guys, and I guess I should also mention we're going to be on till 2 p.m.
2 p.m.
We've got an extended session.
And if you really like Ruminations, at 4 p.m. we're having a sleep out on the Parliament steps.
Who is?
We are. Oh, the Homeless Persons Union, I should say, which is not quite synonymous with... Ruminations, though there is quite a bit of overlap. So, yes, so at 4 p.m. today, we'll be sleeping out on the Parliament House steps. And that'll be, until sometime in the morning when daylight breaks.
Yes, all the walls have been put up, so you have to be the person out amongst the weather trying to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And indeed,
very cryptic tone.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be protesting against things like the state government's diminution and destruction of public assets, especially the impending demolition of the Markham Avenue public housing estate in Ashburton. We'll be having reflections on the Wayne Mouse Perry verdict, the introduction of the cashless card in Ceduna, the family and domestic violence crisis, and the punitive treatment of the unemployed by employment service providers. Come on, people, let's join together and make our voices heard.
Well done, Daz. You got a great voice.
Yeah, so food
not...
You got
a big voice, Daz.
Yeah.
Big booming voice. Very sexy. No comment. So... Food Not Bombs and Lentil as Anything are coming down at 7:30.
Good on you guys.
They're going to cook up some food for the hungry masses.
Hooray!
That'll be good.
Lettuce in 55 ways.
Yes. So as I was saying, we've got a big show. We've got a couple of guests calling in. And the first guest will be calling in at around 25 past 12.
Yeah.
And that's Brian Lipman, and he's the CEO of Winteringham. So can you give us a little blurb about that, Spike?
Winteringham.
What will he be talking to us about?
Well, he'll be talking to us about some of the issues that people that are elderly or of senior age or aged, who have been homeless for a number of years. Winteringham provides housing and care for people that have, had sort of difficult lives. And I would like to talk to him about some of the conditions that develop through a life, a difficult long life. And just, it's a very different way of dealing with, it's very social justice centred, I suppose, or motivated.
Winteringham.
Yeah, it's very much a social justice and puts the client or the person who's being provided with support at the centre. So it's rather than being viewed as someone that is homeless and aged, it's more of seeing someone who's aged and homeless. So rather than defining someone by their housing status, it's recognising that they are of a senior age and that they require housing. And some of the let's face it, this whole word, the word disability is quite a loaded one because, during our life's journey, we're all going to lose our eyesight, our hearing, have difficulty moving around. So it's a very, I think it's a very loaded word, and it's a I find it a controversial word, disabled or disability, where I think we should be speaking to the person who has the challenges.
It's an othering term, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
If you're traditionally called disabled, it's like you're not part of the mainstream, you're disabled. What do you guys reckon? Do you reckon it works like that?
Well, most disabled people would have a certain way of keeping their mind together where they don't let petty things get them down because they've faced their struggle from an early age and they've learnt to live with it where other people wouldn't know how to cope with it.
What do you reckon, Daz? Do you reckon it's at others, people like that, that separates them from the
mainstream? Well, it does. It's difficult, though, to think of a term like... Spike used challenges. Well, yes, you could do that. But even that, if you say the challenged or something, it's difficult. Any word you apply is going to have a connotation, isn't it?
Is it you pigeonholed or you do become a prisoner jumping through hoops?
Well, that's it. We want to avoid pigeonholing people. At the same time, if you have to talk about them,
it's hard to.
So you should, just as long as people are aware of that, that labelling someone something can be, like, offensive to them.
Well said, Dave.
And so just... Well, be tactful, basically.
Yeah, because we were listening to that the bioethics, the radical philosophy show, and they were talking about bioethics and disability and how disability is stigmatized, just like homelessness is. People with mental health, is it disabling if you speak to that person? They might be living a full, happy life with love, aspirations, ambitions, just like anyone else. The fact that they may be in a wheelchair may make no difference to them. It's just the society which, wants people
perceives
to work and pay taxes.
Way. Perceives it a certain way.
That's right.
It's not necessarily right.
No, it's not. It's not.
And really, with the mental health, I just see is where all prisoners jump through hoops. Once you get classified as mentally ill, you can bleat to them as much as you like in a calm tone, an annoyed tone, or just a flat-out frustrated tone, and you're still coming up as mentally ill by the doctors and you have to jump through their hoops.
All right, I'm going to... we've got a special radio interview that we conducted on Spike's brother, actually. He's an urban artist and a solo bass player, a groove bass player. That'll take... And his name is Marzi Mars, or the Style Machine.
Yeah.
So that'll take us up to our call from Brian Lippman, the CEO of Winteringham, who will call in about 12:25.
How are you,
I'm
Mars,
just going to say goodbye and see you all next week. Thank you for listening, people.
Oh, cheerio, Tone.
Have a good one, Tone.
And, we say a hello to Mario and Laura.
How you going,
And
Mom?
We'll take you now to the first half of our special radio interview.
Marzi Mars, the Style Machine. I do urban art and music bass player, solo bass player.
Came first, the music or the visual art?
The visual art. I remember one day in high school, I felt lonely, and I thought to myself, what could I do, to be famous? I thought, I'll be an urban artist. So I went out and hanged out with some dudes and be a Beastie Boy in the late 80s and early 90s, and then I got sick and I left it all behind. But in that period of time, I picked up the bass because Johnny said, hey, Marzi, you should play the bass. So I said, that's a cool idea. So I picked up the bass, started jamming with everyone, and, took it from there.
So who was Johnny, Marz?
Johnny's an urban artist down with the fellas in Melbourne. He's king of art. And, I was hanging out with him, painting and all that sort of thing. And one day he just said, should play bass.
What sort of stuff are we talking about, like graffiti?
Yeah, graffiti. I was a Marzi and I was doing graph with the fellas, with the Beastie Boys. I'm the heavy dudes. And they took me under their wing and taught me the art of wild style drawing, your name, you know. So I learnt the art of that and rocked on.
What is wild style drawing, Mario?
It's a way of drawing your name in a detailed fashion, you know, very detailed and complex. People call it wild style, and I learned how to do that and took it from there.
Why is it called wild style, Mark?
Because it's a way of drawing your name in a detailed fashion. There's a lot of connections and lines and drawings you can do to your name. And I learned the art of wild style, you know. It's a really detailed, hard-to-read way of drawing your name.
And so where would that be?
Around Melbourne and northern suburbs, the Epping line and around Melbourne, yeah.
Along the train line?
Yes, basically, yeah.
And what kind of colours?
Basically gelati sort of thing, you know what I mean? Like writers like to be, sometimes they like to be colourful or one colour filling in the outline when they paint or something like that. It depends on the artist's feeling or how they want to paint their piece, you know.
What was the feeling that motivated you?
Loneliness, really. I like to be part of a friendship or a crowd or something like that. Plus, going back to the time when I started, I was lonely. Yeah. Even to this day, I'm still lonely because I had to give away sex, drugs and rock and roll, you know. And I got sick, so I stick to myself these days and... And rock on, really, because I enjoy it.
So how did your getting sick, how did that affect your wild style art?
Well, it's a good question because a big time in my life when I first got sick and I let it all go, the art side of things, you know, being a Beastie Boy. In the last 10 years I've been an urban artist in the art scene in Melbourne. And, so I'm enjoying it, you know, go to Brunswick Street Gallery or Whittlesea Council Art Show, things like that, you know. And put up my painting here or there. I can't afford to do solo exhibitions anymore, so I do the group shows, yeah. And people take to it well, thank you.
Who are the people who inspired your art?
Friends in Melbourne, basically, and yeah, the friends around Melbourne, they were Beastie Boys in the 80s and 90s, and I enjoyed living the fast life back then, and now I'm just inspired by the hip-hop culture to paint in an urban style of way, you know, because I love the hip-hop culture, I want to stay true.
Tell us about the hip-hop culture and how that influenced you.
Because it was cool, colourful and happy. It was a funky thing to do. I was born to be a hip-hopper, you know, a Beastie Boy. So that's why I felt I enjoyed being a Beastie Boy.
What does hip-hop mean to you?
Friendship, really. Being someone, like say something. Or I like the idea of being famous, really. So listen up, 'cause you can't say nothing. You shut me down with a push on your butt, but you... The day I got lonely at high school, I said, I want to do graph. So I just thought, yeah, I have some friends and be part of a scene. And I like the idea of being famous, even though it can come back to me in a bad way because I'm a bit, you know, mental illness. But I enjoy it. I want to stay true. New York City is the home of hip-hop, you know. And I've seen a lot of exposure from New York City. And, yeah, the people in the world love New York. Yeah, so do I. I love the hip-hop culture and painting and, like, the birth of hip-hop comes from New York City. That's where I got influenced by, you know, to be a artist.
What is it about fame that you like, Mars?
It's fun to be recognised as an artist, really, you know, or somebody saying something or, you know, like, I don't know, just loneliness, it makes me keep going, you know what I mean? Like, I enjoy, it makes me happy. It's about, yeah, the burst of loneliness, you know.
You're driven by a desire not to be lonely.
Yes, exactly.
What does loneliness mean? Like, is it just physically lonely, being by yourself physically, or tell us what that means, Mark?
Yeah, being on my own, really, because I don't like the sex, drugs and rock and roll aspect anymore because I'm sick. So if I have a chuff or have a few beers, you know, I'll be in a bad way. So I've got to be careful and stick to myself, really, these days. Yeah, so I've got to watch it. You know, I want to live my life till I'm 80-something, you know. So I've got to keep to myself these days.
And that was the first part of our special radio interview with Marzi Mars, the Style Machine, and we'll be back later in the program with the extended second half. And you're listening to Ruminations on this special International Day of People with a Disability.
Hi, I'm Des McIntosh. December the 3rd is International Day of People with Disability. It is important to celebrate this because I think it's time that the government wrote their reports in plain English. I would like to wish everyone listening a happy International Day.
The Sewer Show.
Squatters and unwaged airwaves.
Presenting views, news and interviews from the Centrelink queues.
Information on your squatting, legal and other rights.
Troublemaking news from around the world.
Coming at you every Friday between 5:30 and 6:30 p.m. on 3CR.
I don't want you at home anymore.
I want to go to work so I don't have to be poor. I want a gig with my band on the Portland shore. I want to be free. Is that a crime?
Turn up the radio. I got something to say. Turn up the radio. Turn up the radio. I want a revolution. And I want it today. I want a revolution. I want a revolution. Turn up the radio. I got something to say. Turn up the radio. Turn up the radio. I want a revolution.
right. That was pretty groovy.
Yeah.
It was. In fact, it was Turn Up Your Radio by Joy Bell and the Travoltas.
Special Disability Day song right there. And you're listening to Ruminations with Kelly, Spike and Daz. And now we've got our first telephone guest coming through, which is Brian Lipman, the CEO of Winteringham.
Hi.
Hello, Brian. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you going?
Very well. Thank you for joining Ruminations on this special day.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So I'm going to hand you over to Spike, who's got some questions, and he'll lead the interview and we'll support and join in.
How you going, Brian?
Hey, good.
I'm fantastic, thanks. Thanks for coming onto the show, for speaking to us today. In doing some research for the show and for our discussion, I was struck by what motivated you to develop Winteringham, and what really was screaming out at me was that you were really unhappy, or you know, you'd worked at Gordon House and you'd mentioned that you saw some real acts of brutality, but you also saw some wanton acts of kindness. And also that elderly residents were thought of as homeless, defined by their housing situation rather than their age, and that's what drove you. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty. That's close enough. Yeah.
Close. Thanks.
Yeah, it's complicated. Yeah. I was working at a homeless person's night shelter, and it was the largest one in Australia. There was about 300 people there. I don't know if you remember it, Spike, but it was quite a large building, 10 stories, and there was a lot of elderly people there as well as younger people, and both sexes too, which was pretty well unique around the world to have a night shelter that had both sexes.
I stayed at the Gill, actually. I stayed at the Gill for about two months, I think.
Did you really?
Yeah, that scared the pants out of me.
Yeah, well, it was very similar. So when was that, Spike?
Oh, that would have been the late 80s.
Yeah, okay. So that's around the time when I started Winteringham. And
the 89, is that right?
Yeah. We might have even crossed paths. You never know.
Maybe.
He still looks the same.
There was a lot of people who moved from the various shelters. They moved all around. They were either at Ossendon or the Gill or the Hanover, Gordon House. So some people stayed at one place, but a lot of them moved around. But you would remember if you lived there that there were a lot of elderly people.
Definitely. Yeah, there was there was an older guy that I sort of hung around because I felt safe and he was showing me the ropes.
Yeah. Well, there could be pretty dangerous places, and if you were frightened, you can only imagine how frightened the oldies were.
Yeah.
And around about that time, I started to intersect with the aged care industry because I needed it for my parents, and I found out how good it was, and I thought, well, what the hell are these old guys living in night shelters when we've got such a good aged care system? So I tried to get them into the big church-based aged care system and private and community-based, but never made a single placement. So in the end, in frustration, I left and set up Winteringham to look after older homeless people. And, the first 2 years, I was the only employee, but it slowly grew, and now we've got about 600 employees. We're the largest provider of services, housing and aged care for older, poor and homeless people in Australia.
So you were driven by, I've just got this sort of quote that assistance should not depend on a person's wealth, behaviour or religion.
Mm.
And people should be able to live an independent and dignified life. Was the aged care system at the time not providing assistance to people that were seen not as, I suppose, middle class or who had lived more of a knockabout lifestyle?
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. Whether it was deliberate or planned, that was the end effect. And our guys certainly never got into mainstream aged care at all. And so they ended up living either without any care at all or at Gordon House. But Gordon House was a pretty dangerous place for anyone who was old. Pretty dangerous place for anyone, actually.
Yeah.
But there certainly was a dangerous place for people who are old and frail. So it needed a shake up, and we were able to do that.
What type of conditions are we talking about, Brian? That you deal with, that people who have sort of lived a really sort of, you know, who have been homeless and not been able to get out of that and sort of aged through that experience?
Well, there are all types of conditions, and I suppose it's important for your listeners to know that not all homeless people fit the stereotype of you know, the guys living out on the street and, you know, heavy drinkers and all of that. There's a lot of people who are just pretty ordinary people who have just fallen on hard times. Yeah. And these are people who they might have, you know, had jobs, been unionists, whatever, you know, and their accommodation, as the accommodation's become so expensive in Melbourne, that they've been, they can no longer afford it because they're no longer working. They're just on a pension. They can't afford the rent anymore. So they're being pushed out. They're being marginalised. And some of them are falling on really, really hard times, and some of the places that they're living in are really terrible. But certainly in the night shelters where I used to work, there were some terrible acts of violence there, and people were literally terrified I mean, a really classic example of that is that when we set up Wintringham, we'd presumed that most of our residents were incontinent because that's what they were in Gordon House, but when we got to our place, they weren't, and we discovered the reason they weren't was we had given them an ensuite toilet, whereas at the night shelter they had to go to the toilet in big mass communal toilet blocks, and
so they were
terrified
frightened,
because they used to get bashed there.
Yeah.
So wow.
Little things like that, and they weren't little for the people. So these buildings were all in walking distance of Parliament. And of course, it happened all around the world. It wasn't just in Australia. It wasn't just in Melbourne. This is a system that has happened all around the world.
So can we get Brian to address some specific questions around disability, ageing, and homelessness, Spike? Do you have some?
Oh, look, I'm torn because disability, in the sense that when looking at, and Brian, I'd like to address this to you. When I've looked at some of your YouTube videos, when I looked at your site, I find this word, this whole topic of disability and the word disability and the concept quite difficult, in that I saw people that were really happy, even though they were treated with respect. It looked like they were treated with respect. They had a smile on their face, regardless of whatever condition they lived in, because they had the right care. Would that be accurate, Brian?
I'm thrilled that's the way you saw the website, and I'd encourage your listeners to go and have a look at it. It's www.wintringham.org.au. But yes, it's a social justice company, and we build communities. And I often say that all of our clients are disabled, but they're often not physically disabled. They could be financially disabled or psychiatrically disabled or just socially disabled. I mean, I know I'm really stretching the definition of disabled here, and I don't want to offend anyone, but there's no doubt that any form of disability, and particularly a physical or a mental disability, can certainly push people towards, or a psychiatric disability can certainly push people towards homelessness. And that's it's just a fact. I mean, unless you've got very supportive family and money behind you, people who are disadvantaged are more likely to become marginalised and therefore more likely to become homeless. And certainly we have a lot of people in that category.
Do you equate disability with disadvantage, Brian?
No, I think they're two different words, but they're often, someone could have both those, be disabled and disadvantaged. I don't work in the disability field, so I'm a bit, it's a bit difficult for me to converse, to talk too much to you about all of these issues. we're into social justice, and I'm not frankly interested why a person comes to us. I just want to give them proper care.
Thank
now,
you.
In the process of doing this for 30-odd years, I've noticed that there is a real pattern to the types of people coming to us, and they are almost all working class. They've had disadvantaged lives. They don't have the social supports that I had when I was growing up. There's a real pattern to it. We like to talk about and read in the paper about the professor and the lawyer who become homeless, but these are really rare people. I mean, most of the people who have become homeless have had pretty tough lives. And it would just seem to me perfectly obvious that if you've got a disability as well, you're going to be even more at risk. Would you agree with that?
Definitely.
Yeah.
What I'd like to add is I don't know, how many. Well, apart from people that have like physical challenges and maybe in wheelchairs and are more comfortable with that actual definition, it seems like the outsider, the power structures in society are placing that definition on people rather than them seeing themselves as disabled or, because these things, are, as you mentioned, can develop through having a hard life.
Yeah, and also it's interesting you use the word seeing because some people just don't even see people who are disabled. We had an instance of an old guy who had some dementia, and he left our facility and got on a train, and got to Spencer Street, and then got on a long distance train and got to Sydney. And then
and then
got to Brisbane. Can you believe this?
What?
And we eventually able to track him down because we have good networks all around Australia with homeless services. And I told him the story. I rang this guy that I knew and I said, get your people to go out and have a look because one of our guys has gone missing. He's not able to make rational decisions. He's not sane. He's at huge risk and he's very frail and he's in a wheelchair. They found him 3 days later in the mall in Brisbane, and he'd been sitting in the mall. I mean, his wheelchair was full of urine and feces. He was gaunt, and people had been walking past him for 3 days. So it's out of sight. It's, you can actually see someone, but not they're in your line of vision, but you actually don't see them.
So that was another question I'd like to ask, and I know this is a little bit controversial, but what do you think about, as someone that works with people in your area, what do you think about days like International Disability Day or Homelessness Day or People with an Addiction Day? How much difference does that make? And shouldn't we be examining these issues on a daily basis rather than, for me, I just want to be honest and transparent. And I feel like it's a bit of tokenism.
Yes, it's, I guess you're right. For someone who does it all the time, sometimes these days go straight past me.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it was a National Disability Day today. I mean, I'm ashamed, but I didn't know. But you see, I work with it every day. It's a bit like these CEOs who sleep out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one day. So what?
That's right.
But on the other hand, it's better than nothing, I suppose. So they're good questions, Spike. It's difficult for me to answer.
Do you think sorry, Brian. Sorry to interrupt, but do you think it's a good awareness-raising tool?
I think it has to be. I think anything is like that. I think it's like, acknowledging country.
Yeah.
I think these things are important, but your point is really valid. They've got to be followed through with action and not tokenism, and it's very easy to follow through.
Because we don't hear the voices of the people who are being labelled as disabled. They might be living happy lives. I mean, to say to someone's having a disability or, I just feel like I don't hear, I feel like as an individual, as a member of this community, I don't hear the voices of these people and their contribution to the discussion.
Yeah, well, I And that's true. Powerless people do find it very difficult to engage with the media and to engage with society. I guess one of the things I wanted to say is that it's really important to see that homelessness is not a disability.
Yeah, no, no.
And I think that you can be homeless and be disabled, but homelessness is not a disability. It's a poverty issue. It's a function of an unequal society or whatever, however you words you want to use, but it's not a disability. And I guess that's probably some of the issues that we're a little bit concerned about with the rollout of NDIS. It's seen as a silver bullet to solve problems all around Australia for all sorts of things. And even in aged care, some of it's been deflected into NDIS. And we certainly have concerns that our elderly people who are under 65 are now going to have to go in community care via the NDIS. And the reality is these guys aren't disabled. They're just homeless.
Yeah.
And they won't be able to compete with genuinely disabled, nor should they, I suppose, genuinely disabled people for funds. They should be able to still make access to aged care. So there's a lot of issues rolling around out about that. And I think some of your questions are really good because they go to the heart of definitions.
Yeah.
And while service providers don't want to be talking about that, they want to just get out there and do the stuff, we have to be cognizant of the fact that a lot of the work and the way the programs are set up and the way they're funded are resolve around definitions.
Yeah.
And definitions of homelessness and definitions of disability are very important.
And I've just had a mind lapse, but I suppose it's important that when we're talking about, again, when we're talking about people, I suppose through having a long-term homeless experience, would you agree that being exposed to the elements can make it more difficult in your older age, that you can develop conditions that can be disabling?
Oh, well, absolutely. Were you homeless for a long time?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you would know it better than most people. But to give you an example, aged care... For mainstream aged care, for mainstream society, I mean the typical person in aged care society, in aged care homes, is probably going to be, this is a generalisation,
yeah.
It's not unique, but it's not, it doesn't cover everybody, but just on average, is probably going to be about an 85-year-old white Anglo-Saxon female middle class with a loving family. I mean, that's not universal, but that's a general principle. If you go to most aged care families, aged care facilities, they're primarily female, they're primarily middle class, they're primarily in their 80s, and often they have families. Wintringham works with elderly homeless people, and our profile, we've done recent tests and looked at it, and interesting enough, I just got an email from a colleague in America in New York and telling me exactly the same story, exactly. It's fascinating. All that way away over in America, it's still the same. Is the average age is 60 or 65. It's male. It's more liable to be working class and more liable to have no family. Now, that's not universal by any means. We've got elderly females with family and everything like that. But generally speaking, our guys are 20 years younger, and they're more liable to be male. Now, 20 years younger, that equates to exactly what you're just talking about. That's because homelessness ages people prematurely. It's the same argument that the Koori population have used, that the lifestyle and the disadvantaged and the lack of access to proper care and food and housing ages you. So the longer you're homeless, the more liable you are to be to age prematurely, and that's not counting. That's not including anything like drug use or anything like that. That's just the process of not eating properly, not being able to keep the body at a safe temperature.
Yep.
So you get too cold or too hot. You don't have access to the drugs and medicines that say I have access to. You've got stresses. People say that the stresses of running
a business or
a
something.
A business are pretty high, and I've run a $40 million turnover business with 600 staff. I don't think my stresses are anywhere near as much as an older person living on the streets.
Sorry to interrupt, but Brian, we're running out of time. But can I ask you one question? One more question, please. Sure. How do you feel? What's your view on, you know, our sort of great capitalist Western society? You know, we developed the atom bomb. We burn fossil fuels. And the way we treat our older people, in that we put them in aged care rather than sort of like in Asia where they become part of the extended family. Do you have a view on that? And do you think that that's impacted, you know, yeah, do you have a view on that?
Well, look, you raised a hell of a lot of things there. I mean, if I just narrow it down to the aged care side of it, I think you shouldn't jump in and say aged care isn't a good place. I'll use my mother as an example. She certainly wasn't homeless. She was a middle-class lady.
Yeah.
Saw herself as a lady. She was, when Dad died, she was alone. And I used to visit her a lot, at least once or twice a week, and I'd be ringing her most days, but she was lonely.
Yeah.
And she eventually moved into aged care, mainstream aged care, and her whole life blossomed.
Yeah,
she got friends. She got a little bit of dementia. In fact, it got very bad dementia in the end. But along the process, she was able to flirt with the old fellas. And yeah. She had a great time.
Yeah.
You know. Now, there's plenty of examples, and I've looked at them in Asia where oldies live with their family and they're abused.
Okay.
They're not necessarily looked after at all. It might
Good
sound
point.
Great.
Yeah.
And also the other thing that you've got to remember, Spike, is almost inevitably. That falls on the women.
Yeah,
it falls on the daughters or daughters-in-law, and they almost become prisoners to looking after the elderly. So that, you know, we can say that sounds awfully lovely. The oldies stay at home with a loving family, but sometimes it's horrendous. So I think we've got a really good aged care system. My argument was that the homeless couldn't access it. Well, we'll be able to fix that now, so homeless can access it.
All right, mate. Look, thank you for coming on today and for having a chat with us. It's been fantastic. I've actually saw you speak at a homelessness conference maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and it was fantastic. So, look, congratulations and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, mate.
No worries. Bye. Have a good one.
Spike's been impressed by Winteringham for a while, haven't you, Spike?
Yeah. Look, I have, and because... They treat people with respect in the sense that I should have directed this to Brian when he was on air, but when we were speaking to him, but I know that if you had a drinking problem and you were homeless and you had nowhere to stay, rather than deny you somewhere to live, if you drank, you'd be prescribed say a dozen bottles of beer a week. Now you could drink those dozen bottles in one day. Or you could drink a bottle a day or two a day with your friends and reduce your intake all at once. So they respect that it wasn't a paternal view of aged people. It was respected who they were and didn't try and turn people into sort of, perfect, clean sort of living. You know, they respected people where they were at in their journey in life.
You got any opinions on those issues, Daz, and about the work that Winteringham does?
Well, no, it's good. Well, it's good that there is a place where the elderly and the homeless can get a bit of respect. So, yes, good work, Winteringham.
So after that lengthy interview, I think we should have a bit of a music time, and you're listening to Ruminations. It's 10 minutes to one with Kelly, Spike and Daz on this very special International Day of People with a Disability.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.